Hey, in today's show, I am joined by Adam Brown, who is an ASCD emergent leader, an emergent scholar. He's emergent everything. He's an influencer. You're going to love this show. And we're going to hear why Mr. Belding's a great role model for a principal. I say that tongue in cheek. Adam's dissertation on teacher burnout, how becoming an ASCD emerging leader impacted his leadership, and three ways to find more time to read and personally develop. Never take you for granted, y'all. Thank you for being a listener, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
Hey there, Better Leaders. We are in for a treat today. I am joined by education mastermind Adam Brown. And Adam is in his 8th year as an educator. After 4 years of teaching, he moved into a principal position. And now in this 4th year, Adam is a principal for grades 6 through 12 at the Renaissance Academy in Virginia Beach. He is currently working on his dissertation at the College of William and Mary. Adam has dedicated his career to reaching and empowering all students. Adam is a 2014 American Educational Research Association Emerging Scholar, 2016 ASCD Emerging Leader, and 2016 ASCD Influence Leader. Adam is a presenter and currently blogs for Corwin Press, ASCD, and EduRise.org. A student of leadership, Adam seeks to improve and learn from the world around him. Adam, thank you so much for taking time and joining me on the show.
All right. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk to you.
So 8 years in education, what inspired you to pursue a career here?
I've been surrounded by educators my whole life, so it's cliche to say it's in my blood, but it's in my blood. My mom is a phenomenal teacher. She's about 25 years teaching now. She's won all different kinds of awards. She's the teacher that every kid wanted to get into. She would stay late, work on weekends, phenomenal projects. So hopefully one day I'll be as good as she is at education. My father is a minister, and he's just demonstrated kind of that servant leadership model my entire life. And I've got so many stories about him and just going the extra mile to help those around him. My wife used to run a children's organization to help children who are sick or ill and fulfilling their dreams and wishes. And, you know, just my whole life I've been surrounded by people who want to help others, serve others, just public service. So I think I would look really bad if I didn't go into something where I was trying to help other people. So that's kind of the route I took.
You'd definitely be the black sheep among that crowd.
Yeah, no pressure.
No pressure at all. Share with us, the listeners, favorite story of yours with your father being that type of servant leader.
I got a perfect example. We grew up in a real small town. And since he was a minister, we moved probably every 2-3 years. But in this small town in particular, we lived there for about 7 years. And one day, my sister, myself, and my dad were home. And we had someone who was homeless knock on the door and was looking for money. And my sister and I were real young and we were real scared. So we ran and hid underneath our bed. And my dad actually talked to him, gave him a night to stay in the hotel at our local. We have one hotel in our town. That's how small it was. Took him there, gave him dinner, had him stay one night in the hotel and kind of helped him out through there. Another story is we had in the Virginia Beach area when he was a minister here, there was someone who was breaking into local churches and stealing money and stealing other things. And when they caught the guy, my dad went to visit him in jail and talk to him and see how he could help him. So it's just that type of mentality of helping everybody, no matter the circumstance.
Yeah, that's a heart of gold right there. And what a role model to look up to as you're growing up in your formative years.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you talked about your father being a servant leader. Is that how you would describe your leadership style?
I think so. I think, you know, when I first became a principal, I think I used servant leadership in the wrong way. I was a servant leader where I wanted to help everybody and anybody. And what it ended up doing was really not enabling, but I would make excuses for people who weren't doing what they need to, or I wasn't pushing them to, you know, to make a bigger impact on the kids. And even though I worked with great teachers, I felt like I did a disservice to them because I was just wanted everybody to like me because I was a young administrator. Mm-hmm. I had a lack of confidence about my ability as a leader, and I felt like I needed to go above and beyond in helping them. And at times, I felt like I didn't have their best interests at heart because all I wanted to do was have them to like me. So as my leadership style has evolved, I still think it's servant leadership, but it's servant leadership in a different lens where I feel like now I'm in a place where I can push people. I strive to have them work better. I work from an empathetic mindset instead of sympathetic mindset. And I think I see better results, and I think I'm a better leader for it at truly initiating and facilitating what I think is a servant leader.
Was there some point in your career, some type of catalyst that helped you pivot and make that move towards true servant leadership as opposed to the one filled with mistakes?
Yeah, I think one of the best, one of my life-changing events was when I started my work at William & Mary. I entered into a cohort with just amazing people that were much more experienced than I was, much smarter than I was, and still much smarter than I am, working with great professors. And just reading, just continuing to read and to discuss leadership with other leaders really just started reshaping my thinking. And what was funny is, William & Mary is probably about 40 minutes from my house. So when I would go to class, I would go there, and we would talk about what we're reading. And on the way back, I would say, oh my gosh, I've got it all wrong. I can't believe I've been leading in this style. I've got it all figured out now. And then the next time I went to William & Mary, the same thing. Oh my gosh, I have it all wrong now. I should have done this and this. So it's just that constantly evolving look in the mirror of what type of leader I am, how can I improve? And that all stemmed from just being around amazing educators and talking with them and challenging myself and not thinking I have it all figured out. In fact, I'm in a place now where I don't think I have anything figured out. I'm just seeking to improve every single day.
That's me too. I have nothing, absolutely nothing figured out, but give it your best shot every day.
Yeah. And I think it's a much more comfortable position to be in, to admit that you don't have the answers,
right?
And that your leadership style is that you're leading by example, by being comfortable and saying, you know what? I don't know the answer
yet. Yeah.
I think this is where we have to go. Being confident in your decisions, but also being confident in admitting when you don't know what the next step is and seeking that advice from people that you supervise or people that you look up to. And that's the style, I think, that makes an impact.
Oh, it does. You're inviting all those voices to the tables saying, listen, I don't have it all figured out, but I bet as a team we can put our minds together and come up with a great solution that works for our community. And inviting people to the table to do that type of work, I think gets folks fired up.
Yeah, and what's funny is, I became a principal at 28, and I'm taught for 4 years, and then I was bumped up to a principal position, and then I had no clue what I was doing, and I was playing the part. I grew up in the 90s, so I said, okay, I'm going to be Mr. Feeney or Mr. Belding from Saved by the Bell. And I was like, what would they do in this scenario? And I led in that style where I was just like, what would a principal do in this position? And then I portrayed that image, and it was really ineffective. I think we had a good year in my first year, but I was just so insecure about who I was and what type of leader I was. And I would never admit the faults. I wouldn't make up things, but I would try to cover for what I didn't know. And now my fourth year as a principal is the exact opposite. I'm taking over a new building, leading them in a new direction. And someone comes up to me, hey, what do we need to do here? I'll say, I don't know. Let's talk about it. Let's figure it out. And I just think that makes a world of difference.
Man, I hear so many great stuff that I want to unpack. I don't know if you'll have an answer to this, but trying to portray our favorite principal TV personalities, did that ever lead you down some type of path that, looking back now 4 years later, was quite humorous?
Yeah, let me think here. I watched, there was like a Mr. or Saved by the Bell episode, and I forget which one it was, but it was almost like they had gotten in trouble, and they were all sitting, and it was the same six kids that somehow always end up Mr. Belding's office. And he would always kind of like sit on the table, the front of the table, with one leg kind of propped up, talking to him in a real casual style. And I remember doing that with two of my teachers, and I must have looked like the biggest idiot. And to be completely truthful with you, I just, before they came in, it was one of those tough conversations, and I said, okay, I've seen this somewhere. I'm going to do it. And I look like a complete fool. So as embarrassing as that is, it's the truth. So
I love it. And you can admit it. So that's part of just owning it, right? Not knowing stuff, owning things, that's great.
Oh, yeah.
So Okay, I embarrassed you there, brought out that type of story. So let's talk about some of your strengths. I'm really interested in your mindset. You say you took over a new building, so I guess that's the Renaissance Academy. Mm-hmm. And this is my first year at my middle school as well. I'm just curious, like, how did you approach leading a new school?
So in the Renaissance Academy, I oversee one of the wings. We're an alternative school. And I came in. It's the same type of experience where I come in as a young administrator, even though I'm my fourth year, and I'm working with amazing educators who have taught over 20, 25 years, and I have new teachers, and I have trying to bring everybody together. So something that I've adapted, throughout the years is the best professional development and the best way to get people on board is by just letting them speak and getting their voice heard. So all of the professional development that first week before kids returned, 90% of it was just us talking and kind of get on the same page and all developing the same kind of mindset, me being very upfront about what my vision is, what my expectations are, what I need to learn from them, what I'd like for them to learn from me, how we're going to handle difficult situations, how we're going to reflect together, support each other. And what I found was, that first day people come back and there's anxiety, there's people that are excited, people that have anxiety, and they're just not sure what to expect. And then when you handle it, just focusing on the mindset and working as a team and developing that vision together, you see that kind of barrier get removed right away. And, I thought we had a really good first week back. People talking, open communication. And I think my role as a leader now is to continue that enthusiasm, that support, that open communication, because it's very easy to do that the first week back. But when the kids come back and the year starts going, all of those different things start factoring in and you've got to rise above that and continue that open dialogue and that shared vision. And when times get tough and no one is in the mood to listen to it, you've got to be the champion and you got to rise above everything. And so it's just about, you can train them on any type of program or in service or curriculum, but without the mindset and the buy-in, you're not going to get anywhere.
Are there any specific systems, I guess, you have set up in place to have that type of open communication?
Yeah, we went through a few different trainings that really inspired me, but the one, it was on effective communication, and it was just different exercises, and it's taken from adaptive schools curriculum, and it's just these really effective strategies where, it's this whole resource where if there's a difficult conversation you need to have, or if it's getting people on the same page or reaching consensus or getting a lot of info and having to process it and talk to each other, it does all these strategies and it's really easy to use. And I basically took that and just modeled all my professional development around that. So adaptive schools, I can't recommend enough. It's one of those things when you go through the training, it's a 2-day training, 4-day training, and everything just kind of clicks and you say, oh my gosh, this is it. This is what I've been looking for, because it has nothing to do with curriculum. It's just about how to talk to people and how to get people on the same page.
I like that. And it's not necessarily sexy. It's not, man, we love talking about data and talking about test scores and that kind of stuff, accountability. But really, in my opinion, what moves a school forward are those how to communicate well, right? Soft skills, emotional intelligence, empathy, those kind of things. Pat Lencioni's work, The Advantage, that kind of stuff. Crucial conversations.
Yeah, and if you read, I'm a big reader, and a lot of the books I'm drawn to are just leadership books, and not even particularly with school, but they look at all these great companies, what do they do differently? And what you see is, you do have the curriculum, you do have the in-service trainings, those are there to develop those type of skills, but the focus is just that shared vision and the buy-in. All those great companies, they have a shared vision, they treat their customers right, they treat their employees right, and they're very open and honest, and they hold people accountable, but they also support them, and they're very empathetic, and they build them up. And that's what I try to model with my school, and I'm still finding that balance, how to get there, but I try every day to improve on that.
So what do you think, what would you consider, besides the Mr. Belding impersonation, your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
It's hard to move past that Mr. Belding incident, but I think my worst leadership mistake, and I don't know if it was a single event, but when I wasn't confident as a leader, I shied away from having real effective and honest conversations with staff members. You know, and that's where I got back to the enabling part. Even though they're great educators, as a leader, you have to have sometimes those tough conversations, and you have to be reflective, and you have to be very honest with how you're feeling towards them. And I really shied away from that. And I think what that caused was that sympathy, not empathy part, where I felt really bad about, you know, because I know how busy they were and I know how stressed they were, and I was just wanted to help them. And it really, I think it impacted kids in the end because I wasn't challenging them enough. And so my goal throughout the past few years is to really to strengthen my confidence to have those effective conversations. In the end, it's about the students. And I felt like I wasn't putting the students first in the early years of my leadership by not having those real tough conversations or necessary conversations to grow.
And you're at William & Mary now studying, and working on a dissertation. What's your focus there?
So I'm looking at indicators of burnout for new and veteran teachers who work with students with challenging behaviors. I try to champion the students who I feel like are, I call them the forgotten students. They kind of get pushed through the system. They don't achieve success. And then before you know it, they've used school in this extremely negative light, and it's been nothing but negative. So we try to teach those kids, reteach them, reeducate them, get them back to where they need to go. And I think what's necessary is to look at the teachers we hire to educate these kids. And it's tough, and there's a lot of burnout there. And so I think one of my goals is to see if we can predict what these burnouts are for these teachers and help them and support them, so these kids get a quality education no matter what point they are in their life with receiving an education.
Where are you in the process of completing the dissertation?
I've got a huge pin board in my room that's mapped out for chapter 2, so review the literature. So what's interesting about if people ever go through doctorate work is you go through the coursework, it's intensive, and you got a lot of support, especially at the College of William & Mary. They were fantastic, and their program is outstanding. And then you're kind of on your own. And they say, this is what we need from you for here. Okay. We've given you all the skills. And it is really interesting to just kind of be out there. And, you know, the people are there to support us, but it's up to us. And so my goal is to be done by March, and I'm going to be having some late nights, but I'm going to get it done. So.
This March?
This March, yeah. Wow. So it's a lofty goal, but I want to get it done. And I got my student loans are just waiting for me to pay them. So right. I need to get started on that.
Yeah. How do you balance leading a school and then working on the dissertation?
You know, that's something I probably is my biggest deficiency is balance. I went through a very interesting past few months where I got selected as an emerging leader for AICD and went to this conference with other emerging leaders and other leaders in education. And it just blew my mind, the people that were there and what they've already done. And so that just motivated me to write. And one of the things I want to do is just write. And I love to write. And so I've been blogging, I've been doing Twitter chats, I've been presenting ever since then, because it's just motivated me to kind of expand what I'm doing outside of the school building. And that has really taken up a lot of time. I think the balance I have now, even though I need to improve upon it, is, you know, I get off work and I have a 3-year-old son, and my wife stays at home with him. And I take my 3-year-old son and play with him, feed him dinner, get him to bed, and then I start work again. And, you know, on the weekends, I feel like I'm working. So I don't know. I need to improve on that. I think it's going to be a New Year's resolution for me to find balance, but I don't think I'm anywhere close where I need to be. So,
What do you think? What would be your first step towards, getting that balance?
I think it's just having an honest conversation with myself, kind of listing out the priorities, being very reflective. I get caught up in the what's the most important, answering emails and getting this work done, make sure everything gets in on time, and making sure I get on this Twitter chat, make sure I write this blog by this deadline. And it's just taking a step back and not worrying about the deadlines. And it's just what's important right now and what can wait till tomorrow. And it's just putting down the phone at night and putting down the computer and just enjoying time with family. And that's what I got to improve upon. And so I think it's just being honest with myself and holding myself accountable and putting my family, making sure they're first at all times. And that's something I need to do.
Three quick resources for the listeners, maybe you as well. I'll talk about, I guess, how they've all impacted me in terms of prioritization. But essentialism, I talk about that on the podcast quite a bit. Wrote a really long blog post summarizing all the chapters. But that's a big book for me. It helped me build a framework on how to make decisions. So given any opportunity, the author talks about having minimum and extreme criteria. And for any opportunity, it has to pass all 3 for 3 on the minimum criteria and 2/3 of the extreme criteria. And if it doesn't, it's a no go. He also explains too, and you know, I can apply this to just picking out some outfits last night, but I have some clothes mailed to me. You know, there's a number of services that do that. And hey, if you want to sponsor the show, you know, give me a call. But so I won't mention who I use. But anyways, so I had a couple pairs of pants, two nice shirts, and a hoodie. And my girlfriend was over, and I said, you know, what about this, what about that, or whatever. And for me, like, watching her reactions, you know, nonverbals and stuff, if I knew, right, if she didn't love it, then it was a no. You see what I'm saying? And if I didn't love it, if it wasn't a what you could say, a hell yes, then it was definitely a no. So that's essentialism. Have you read that one?
I have not, no. Okay. I'm going to have to look at that.
Yeah, but don't add it. I mean, I'm not trying to add work to you. So essentialism, another good one, and I read these with my coaching groups, but Procrastinate on Purpose, that one was huge by Rory Vaden. Oh, my God, that one was incredible. Would love to have him. I'd love to have all these people on the podcast, but he had something called the Focus Funnel, and essentially it's just like 5 different layers of how to filter decisions. And I don't have it memorized how it works, but you try to delegate things, you try to procrastinate on things, systematize them, and there's 2 more. And at the bottom, you know, if it doesn't work through it, you either put it back at the top of the list, you eliminate it, or you actually have to do it. And so that was a really powerful way of thinking about stuff as well. The last resource is called The 12-Week Year. And that book rocked my world. We're recording in November. My coaching groups are reading the book in December. This is released, the podcast, in January. So everyone hopefully will have benefited from it. But he talks about, the author, the ideal week. So I create a spreadsheet, 15 minutes down the vertical axis, and then the weekdays, you know, on the horizontal one. And for every block of time, you know, when am I answering emails? So I do that twice a day for just 30 minutes. An hour total. When do I want to be in classrooms? When do I want to be doing one-on-one coaching with APs? You know, just everything that we have to do. But putting it right on paper and saying, this is how my ideal week would operate. And then there's another spreadsheet, because there always has to be another one. But for 12 weeks, what's my goal? So as a new principal like you, it's communication. They said it was broken down at my school prior to me leading it. And so that was a area where I thought I could move the needle and make an impact very quickly. So if my goal is communication, I have 6 to 7 tactics, things I need to do related to communication every day. And the cool thing with the spreadsheet is that if I put a little X by the tactic, and that could be, one of them is as simple as writing a thank you card. Another one is completing the weekly newsletter with, you know, all the big events coming up. Anyways, when you put the X there, it talks to the first page of the spreadsheet, and I can track and measure how I'm progressing toward my goal. And according to the author, if you're hitting 85% or better, you're gonna have a very impactful 12 weeks. I'm only using it, this is week 2, because I just finished the book myself, but I'm proud to say week 1, 88%.
Oh, there you go. You know, that's interesting. And I guess for anybody listening who wants to become a principal or aspiring administrator, you know, the training you receive, the support you receive is all about, you know, 20 different people giving you 20 different things to administer in your school and meeting these deadlines. But there's no training around how to be effective and manage the resources, get everything met, and be a leader at the same time. And stuff like that, I think, is really important for administrators to think about, is your leadership style and ways that you can organize and maximize your resources and your time to be an effective leader. And that kind of gets left out in the fold with everything else that gets push towards you. So that, I think that's pretty impressive.
Why do you think it gets left out like that?
I think the in-your-face accountability measures and the policies, all of that is very upfront, black and white. It has to get done. And if there's only 4 or 5, that's okay. But when you have 50 different things, and then they're constantly updated, and they have to get done, that consumes your entire day and your all your thinking. And it takes, I think, leadership is about taking all of that and seeing how it fits within the culture and the system of, you know, the learning environment of your school, and making sure that that's, you know, you become, the danger is you, when you focus just on that, you become the building manager. You're just about, can we meet these deadlines? Can we get it done? And that's when people and students get left behind. A true leader takes that and sees the bigger picture. We're going to get this done, but it's going to fit within our vision of what this school needs to be. And that's difficult because it's more abstract, I think, for people to think about.
Yeah, but that goes back to, you know, why you have to have clearly defined, I guess, core values and what your school is about to figure out and articulate, you know, how those things are connected.
Yeah, without that vision, you're going in 30 different directions and you're getting tangled up. So,
and let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You know, I'm just like you. I'm a school leader that wants to get better every single day, and that's why I created a free gift for you called The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. You can grab it today for free by texting the word UNLOCK NOW to 33444. That's UNLOCK NOW to 33444, and The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential will be delivered straight to your inbox. And now back to our show.
So Adam, what do you think one class could be that we can add to schools that isn't currently taught that you know of?
You know, I don't know if it's a class or would it be a residency, almost like a doctor. I have one of my dissertation chair and professor, William Mary, he talked about, you know, having teachers come in and sitting and not just having a mentor where they meet a few times throughout the year, but having to sit through a master teacher and getting trained by them and learning from them, and then this gradual release. And I think what's really missing from our prep classes is our getting teachers in the classroom and finding what their style is. Instead, they get these courses, they get all the literature, and then they're just kind of dumped into a classroom. And then they have to learn about working in a professional setting and dealing with parents and classroom management and meeting the needs of their supervisors. And it's a sink or swim mentality. And I think that's where a lot of first-year teachers start drowning is they haven't had that experience of what it's like to be in a classroom every single day except for their student teaching. But take that and make that all of the prep. You know, make it 3 years of just intensive in the classroom experience, so when they get done, they already have those skills ready to go.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, going back to when I was trained as a teacher, we did a pretty intense, you know, last year when we were in the classroom every day. No, actually, that was just a semester. But before that, you know, just the book knowledge and got great theoretical frameworks and understanding of how kids develop, how to design challenging lessons, rigorous lessons with plenty of critical thinking and cultural relevance. But some of just the practical stuff, like being a principal, how do you manage 50 tasks? Like, how do you manage a classroom? How do you interact with kids, right? These practical things that you only get by doing it day in, day out. You know, you're spot on with that. Adam, what would you consider a book that every principal should read right now and why?
So I'm going to give you more than one.
Sure.
The first one, it's very popular, but Mindset by Dweck is a must read. If you haven't read it, that's something you read. And it really just, it teaches you to look at the bigger picture and always seek to improve and being okay with admitting your faults. And that book really made an impact on me and how I lead and being able to admit that it's okay that I'm not strong in this area, but I seek to improve. Some other books I'd highly recommend, and these came from my time at William & Mary, but Leadership in the New Science by Margaret Wheatley. It's about quantum physics and how it relates to leadership and chaos theory. So it's, you read it and you almost go cross-eyed, but then she takes the science behind leadership and talks about real world scenarios and how there's this unforeseen force that brings people together and helps them work and improve. And some of the best companies have this kind of unforeseen collective attractors to bring them together to make this company great. And it's a very interesting read. Five Dysfunctions of a Team is a great book.
Lencioni.
So that is something I read. It's a very easy read. It's written in a narrative format, and you just read it. And it's just, again, it's just one of those books where you read it, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. I can't believe I didn't read this earlier. And then the last one I'll mention is Good to Great. That's another one that's very good that just talks about leadership and what it means to be a great leader and to get to lead a group of people towards a something bigger than themselves and building people up. So those, if you can read them, please read them because it will change your entire outlook and it will make you a better leader for it.
Yeah, I'm not sure the title, but Lencioni has a new book out this year that builds more on the five dysfunctions of a team. And it has to do something with how to assemble a high-functioning team. So, you know, I'm looking forward to checking that out in 2017.
Yeah, that's if one advice for new principals or leaders is just read, just constantly read. Seek out other people that you work with or that you admire, have a mentor, and just see what they're reading and just read. It will do nothing but improve you.
So I've never asked this question on the podcast, but I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, obviously, I'm a huge reader. I'm a learner. When you do the StrengthFinders 2.0, you know, that's one of my top strengths is being a learner. Mm-hmm. And I think as a leader, you got to stay fed. You got to keep developing this to stay relevant, stay sharp. So I'll answer my own question after you answer it. But I'm curious, where do you find the time to read? Because here's the reason I ask. There's people that tell me, right? And there's people in my building that I'm like, hey, would you like to do this type of book study? I think it'll be good for us just to see how they'd respond to. And they're too busy, right?
Right.
So how do you, I mean, you're doing a lot. You got a wife, you got the kid, dissertation, principal. When do you read?
So one of the best things I do now is, and some people look down on it, I don't know why, but I go to the library, I check out the book on an audio CD, and driving to and from work, I listen to it. And I'm not really an auditory learner, but it's just one way that I can get that information in. And I listen to, what did I listen to? I think it's The Fifth Discipline is what I read or listened to recently. You know, when I read The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, I checked it out from the library, and I literally on Friday night, my wife and I, after we put our son to bed, just kind of sit and watch TV, just hang out, and I was just reading. And before I knew it, I was halfway through the book, and it had only been about 2 hours. So it's just, you know, I watch a lot of sports and a lot of TV, and just supplementing maybe 20% of that time for reading, and I can read a whole heck of a lot. But just the thought of it, you're like, oh, when do I have time? But when you actually just make it a priority, you'll find out you have a lot of time to do it.
Yeah, it's a good point. So we'll give the listeners three action items there, and two of them are from you. So one, Audible books, that's a great way to do that. And I mean, I'll put a link in the show notes, but you know, people can definitely get a free Audible trial through my link. It sponsors the show. Secondly, watch a little less TV, right? You said 20% of the time, and man, that really adds up fast. The third thing I'm going to do and challenge leaders as well, when I talk about my ideal week, part of that is I actually block time within the school day to read. And so I actually do 10 minutes of meditation because I find that if I'm running around task to task, I become a jerk. But if I pause and focus on breathing, become a little more mindful during the day, I'm a lot more pleasant to be around. And then I have the last 20 minutes to read. I do that daily. That's ideal. So it doesn't happen every single day. But it's not like I'm reading comic books. You know, I'm reading on leadership. I'm reading on what happens at effective schools. And it's stuff that I can put into practice that same day, actually.
Yeah, and that's interesting, I think. And I can see it happening in education. But I think the way we need to move is to promote that within our teachers, within our leaders, it's just that mindset of just trying to improve. Because I think ultimately that mindset will filter to our students, because I think it will change teacher practices. I think it will change the way they look at education, the way they look at their classroom, because they want their kids to emulate the traits they have. And I know that when I started growing as a leader, I found myself trying to instill those same traits and values into the people that I led. And I saw myself being a much better leader just because simply I was trying to improve myself. And I think that filtered down. So I think that's where we need to go. It's just kind of seeing the bigger picture and allowing people to reflect and develop their mindset and allow them to read and just being okay with that and seeing the benefit of what that will bring to you.
Adam, what do you do for fun?
work on my dissertation. But other than that, I'm a big sports fan. I watch a lot of sports. I grew up a sports fan. I continue to watch it. So my wife gets pretty annoyed with that, but she deals with it. Other than that, I spend all my other time with my family, with my son. Just got a new house. It's a lot of new things happen, a lot of exciting things. So I couldn't be happier with where I am. I just, it goes back to that balance, making sure I'm putting them first, and I'm trying my best, and I'll get there. But all of that helps me relax and enjoy myself.
This question is also brand spanking new to the show. You're the first one to ever answer it. What was your favorite toy when you were 12?
I didn't have a Mr. Belding toy, so I would say, oh gosh, you know, I was a big video game player, and from time to time I'll still play, but at 12, I mean, I was, if they had professional gaming back then, I think I'd be doing it. But I was a big, and I don't know if it's 12, I'm just pulling it out, but the old game Resident Evil, I got that for my birthday, and I just played that nonstop. And I remember 11 or 12 having my friends come over to sleepovers and play that game and just freak out and
freak
be scared
out.
To go.
Yeah, that's scary stuff, Adam.
Well, there was, I remember 2 a.m. we're playing, and there's a certain scene, if you played this game, you know, where this dog jumps through a window, and we screamed our heads off, woke up my parents. And so I don't know why that memory just came up, but I remember at 12 really enjoying playing video games, and I wish I could go back to being able to play video games all the time, but that just doesn't happen anymore. So.
Right. I know. I actually sold my PlayStation 4. I had them all. I had the Wii U, PS4, Xbox One, the DS, and the PS Vita. I've sold them all except the Xbox One, just because I don't have time. And honestly, the Xbox One I mostly use for like Netflix and stuff.
Yeah, it's funny how life changes on you, but
it's funny how life changes. It's hard to walk away though, because I'll tell you this: they're doing a reboot of the classic Nintendo. It's a Nintendo and Super Nintendo bundled together. I don't know if you saw that, but I want to buy that. Not that I have time, but just to play Mario, right? Or Mario 3. Oh, yeah. To relive the magic. That's what I want.
Well, my parenting goal right now is to get my son into video games when he gets old enough, so I have an excuse to play too. So
there you go.
I'm laying the foundation right now.
Awesome. What message would you put on all school marquees if you could do that for just one day?
Going from Carol Dweck's mindset, there was something that always resonates with me. It says, becoming is better than being. So it talks about, don't think about where you are, think about where you want to get. And I think that's where, ultimately, where we want our students. We need them to, you know, they could ace every test and they could get into the best college, but if they don't have those life skills of challenging themselves, facing adversity, finding ways to problem solve. And if our teachers don't have those traits and leaders don't have that trait, then, and you're satisfied with just being where you are, that, I think that's a dangerous precedent to set. So it's really just, what are you trying to become? So becoming is better than being, is what I would think I would put on there.
Congratulations, Adam. You've made it to the end. This question is quite a doozy. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be the top 3 priorities?
Oh, gosh, that's a good one to end on. No budget, that's good. I think, and this is my creativity trying to come out here, it would be completely open floor plan. It would be sort of, there would be no subjects. It would be all exploratory type learning. So it would be, you know, students trying to figure out who they are as people, individuals, as learners, and having access to explore what they want to be. So if a kid wants to be an astronaut, we would have the ability to send them down to NASA to do some work there, to learn about hands-on application. If they want to be a teacher, having them being able to go to a classroom. So it's just getting kids to experience the life around them, the world around them. If they want to explore, letting them explore anywhere around the world if I didn't have a budget. So it's really, and you know what, the school building could just be a blank canvas, and there could be a central question on the floor, and it would say, what do you want to be in life? And then the kid would tell the teacher, and the teacher would stay back, help them, guide them towards finding that path that they want to get on, and just be truly an observer of their learning and help them go along the same path, and unlimited resources would guide them towards their own answer.
Love that vision. Adam, thank you for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice? And what's the best way to get a hold of you? Maybe Twitter, and you talked about blogs that you write too.
Yeah, I currently blogging for Corwin Press and ASCD and edgyrise.org. So if you ever get a chance, my Twitter account is Adam Brown EDU. So Adam Brown EDU. I'm a Twitter chat fiend. I think I need an intervention. So, but I always have links to the blogs that I write there. You can find me on Facebook, and also I'm on Voxer too. I think Voxer is one of the greatest inventions ever. So if you ever want to find me on Voxer, you're more than welcome to. You can email me at ajbrown@email.wm.edu. Feel free to email me. I'd love to talk to anybody who was interested in the podcast, wants to know more. And I think parting advice for any aspiring administrator is reflect, determine what kind of leader you want to be, and then lead with empathy and with a good heart, and do what's necessary to impact our kids.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Adam. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Adam in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get today's highlights, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Adam, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
All right. Thank you.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge 10 bucks a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.